is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are bringing back their big buy one, get one offer to help fuel your team's off-season training efforts. From now until April 30th, buy one Dr. Dish All-Star Plus shooting machine, get one All-Star Plus for $1,000. Take advantage of this offer while supplies last. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Kyle Juergens, head boys basketball coach at Scott Catholic High School in Omaha, Nebraska, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sokol tonight. We did not do an NBA playoff preview last week, which I guess you and I probably could have predicted that that wasn't going to happen, but we are going to talk some NBA playoffs tonight.
We always think sunshine and rainbows and then things don't happen, but it is what it is. And I know we're going to talk NBA playoffs. I thought we were really going to talk about first place Cleveland Guardians, Mike.
Who?
The best record in baseball.
Baseball started already? Isn't that a summer sport?
Well, it's apparently they play in the rain tonight, Mike. Let's just leave it
Who's
at that.
Who's pitching tonight? Is CC pitching tonight?
No, I don't even know who pitched tonight. Some
Chuck
guy
Nagy?
I've never heard of. Chuck Nagy.
Is Kenny Lofton leading off?
Joey Bell batting cleanup. No, but this is the best record since that 99 team, Mike. This is the best record.
What's the record?
Best record. They are 17-6, Mike.
Wow, nice.
You literally had no idea they were in the first place in the Major League
they
Baseball.
They really must be playing well. Francona really must be managing up a storm. Who's the manager now?
Stephen Vogt. He played catcher for the Oakland A's.
Didn't they bring Grover back?
I know he was a special counsel at some point.
Okay.
But he was a special counsel Stephen at some Vogt, point. No.
Is he a former player?
He played catcher for the Oakland Athletics for 10 years. He's only like 38, Mike. He's like a year older than me. I'm pretty sure.
Well, there you go. Hold on. Did the A's move to Las Vegas yet?
No. There's all drama on that one.
When's that happening? I know they didn't have any fans come to the opener, right?
Well, no, they didn't have any fans come to the opener, and they're not going to be ready in Las Vegas till 2027. So they're going to be playing at some 10,000 seat stadium in 26 because their lease with the current stadium is up and they don't want to renew it since they're leaving. So
there you go. All right. Well, that's enough baseball.
There's our major league baseball.
That's enough baseball for me.
Yeah. I was trying to figure out how old Stephen Vogt was because I didn't want to be telling you the wrong thing. Like I'm pretty sure he's like a year older than me, which
I'm not going to lose any sleep over if he's 38 or 42 or 67. It's not really going to matter to me. I got news for you.
Well, he's 39, so I guess he's 2 years older than me, Mike.
Oh, there you go. Well, two years. Who knows, man? Lofty goals, man. You could be managing the Tribe in 2 years.
I could be managing the A's right now and the Chicago White Sox. The Chicago White Sox, Mike, if you would have picked them in the win-loss draft, you want the losses. They're 3-19 to start the season.
It's not good. Frank Thomas isn't raking this year?
No. Okay. All right. Anyways, okay, that's enough Major League Baseball. We spent 3 minutes on this. All right. So we're here to talk about the NBA, and I think what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the games tonight that have already happened. We are recording this at 11 o'clock, so we do not know the result of this Mavericks Clippers game. We know that Kawhi's back, and we know that James Harden's flopped like 17 times already in this game. So he literally, Mike, I don't know if you saw, he looked like he got smacked in the face, and like he almost died. I thought he died or something. I thought like an Achilles snapped. No, he just got smacked in the face. I thought, you know, whatever. Anyways, we'll talk a little bit about that at the end of the podcast. Obviously, we're not going to be going until that game is over because it's not going to happen. It's only the second quarter right now. But we're going to talk about the other series, and we're going to start with the first game of the night tonight, Mike. We're going to talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Phoenix Suns. Obviously, game one happened in Minnesota. The standout moment was the Anthony Edwards smiling, clapping, Kevin Durant smiling back at him, just like that whole thing. But then tonight was just absolute destruction by Minnesota. I don't know if you even saw that. Did you see the tweet on Saturday morning that I tweeted out and tagged you in about my predictions for the playoffs? Did you see that?
I saw it, but I didn't really commit it to memory. So you can refresh my.
Okay, so I said. In this series, I said Suns in seven, or not Suns in seven. I said Suns in seven. Mike, I'm pulling that one out. I don't think that's happening.
You're reversing that. You're reversing tracks. Probably a good move, I would say at this point.
The Suns are going to get. I think the Suns will get one. I don't think they're going to go winless, but I don't see them winning more than one game. Like, they're just outmatched. Frank Vogel looks like he has no control whatsoever of what's going on. Bradley Beal has not looked great. Booker looked good game one. He was complaining about everything. He's been hanging out with maybe JB a little too much. And then Durant looked like not very good tonight, Mike. He just didn't look good. He didn't look like he had any. And then on the opposite end of it, I mean, Edwards, who didn't even have a good game tonight, right? Like, you agree, he didn't play great tonight. But, like, Mike Conley was awesome. You know, Gobert, just their defense. What was that? Who's that guy who I've never heard of that played really, really well tonight? 25 points near the end of the game. He was injured last year in the playoffs against the Nuggets.
Jaden McDaniels.
Yeah, Jaden McDaniels. Like, he was really, really good. And I just think they have a bit of a thing where they just have guys you never know when they're going to step up. It's kind of like what I felt like the Cavs had when, you know, Garland was out, and every night it was just a different guy who was like stepping up and scoring. I just feel like the Wolves have a bunch of guys that can just do that. And the fact that, like, you've got Conley kind of just anchoring this team as a wily vet. I didn't realize he'd been in the league for 17 years, Mike. That's crazy to me. That's like, let's think back. Like, I heard that tonight, like 17 years in the league, like, and I remember when him and Odin were on the same team in Ohio State. Like, I remember that, Mike. Like, that's crazy.
Playing against Joakim Noah and Al Horford in the national championship game.
And all of them are out of the league. And then here's Mike Conley, who I'm pretty sure
Horford's
he signed like
still
a two.
There. Horford's still
oh, yeah,
here.
Horford's still there, yeah.
But I'm just saying, those two guys, when your perception, I guess the perception of Horford, I would try to perceive that he would be older than Mike Conley,
and,
for sure.
And not only that, Mike, to think that LeBron's played in the league 4 years longer than Conley. Like, that's just – and we'll get there. But anyway, so I think the Wolves are winning this series in five, Mike. I think this series is over in five. Chris Finch has done an awesome job. This team is awesome. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised, Mike, if they're in the Western Conference Finals the way they're playing right now. They're just humming, if not in the finals, for that matter. Like,
well, they're going to see Denver in the next round, so let's temper those expectations a little bit.
I think that's a good series, though. I think Wolves Nuggets is a good series. I don't think the Nuggets are going to walk all over them. I think it's a good series.
Oh well, Minnesota's played Denver. They played them, I guess, as well as anybody did in the playoffs last year in losing 4-1. They certainly pushed Denver, and Minnesota-Denver games in the regular season the last 2 years have been highly competitive, and Minnesota's been a team that has given Denver some difficulty. And when I look at this series, I see a team in Minnesota that when I was watching the game on Saturday, it felt like there were just arms and bodies everywhere. And Minnesota is just a huge, huge team. When you think about Gobert is whatever he is, 7'3" or 7'4" or whatever he is. And then you've got Towns, who I'm still, I don't know how you feel, but I watch Karl Anthony Towns and I have a hard time taking him seriously. Like what he does, how he behaves, whatever. But he is a huge...
He's kind of a clown, human. Mike. He's kind of a clown.
He's kind of a clown. I agree. I watch him and I think that when Minnesota is eventually optimized around Anthony Edwards, that Karl Anthony Towns will not be a part of that optimization. He will be plying his trade somewhere else. I don't know where that somewhere else will be, but I don't necessarily see him being a part of what they're building. But at the same time, he is a huge human being. Gobert is a huge human being. Anthony Edwards is a huge human being. Jaden McDaniels is a huge human being. So you have four guys on the floor when you talk about their starting lineup that when I'm watching Phoenix try to score against this team, they're just as bodies and limbs and size everywhere on the floor. And it feels like anytime Phoenix puts the ball on the floor and tries to go to the basket, there is someone there in their way with a hand up, a body in there, and making it extremely difficult for Phoenix to get to the basket. And now, one of the things that I think people thought would be an interesting matchup in this series was Phoenix is probably one of the best, if not the very best, pull-up mid-range jump shooting team. When you think about Booker and Durant, those are probably two of the best mid-range players that we have in the NBA. And now neither one of them has been outstanding in these first two games. And people were worried that, hey, Gobert, he plays best in drop coverage and protecting the rim. And if you can draw him out and make him come out and guard Durant, make him guard Booker in the screen and roll, that's going to make it difficult. And those guys are just going to kind of rain jumpers over Minnesota's defense. And that hasn't happened for a couple of reasons. One, those guys haven't shot it that well. And two, Minnesota's mixed up their coverages and the way that they're playing and made it more difficult on Phoenix. Just again, by the virtue of Minnesota is just huge. When you watch these games, it just feels like Phoenix just has nowhere to go. There just isn't space on the floor. And that includes Gobert at the rim, McDaniels at the rim, Towns at the rim. And then what McDaniels can do all over the floor, guarding guys in the perimeter and guarding people in the inside, protecting the rim. And then Anthony Edwards is just a monster physically. And I don't know, did you see the play? Were you watching when he picked up Booker full court and just kind of, it was Beal. And he just basically just did the zigzag drill and zigzagged him down the floor. He ended up getting called for a foul. But they can make life for Phoenix, and I'm sure for any other team. And if we look ahead to a potential matchup with Denver, you have sort of the same thing. And there's just a lot of big bodies on Minnesota. So that's the one thing that I take away from sort of that matchup of Phoenix's offense, which is what everybody assumed was going to be their strength, and Minnesota's defense, which clearly has been number one in the league the whole season. That has been a clear victory for Minnesota. So that's been one factor in Minnesota taking this 2-0 lead. And then I think the other factor, certainly on Saturday, it was more glaring than it was tonight when Edwards didn't shoot the ball well. But I still think that the maturity and the growth of Anthony Edwards into a guy who is going to be, if not already, a franchise guy. I think he's going to be a guy that is going to be able to do things at a super high level in the playoffs moving forward. You're talking about he's 22 years old. What he did on Saturday when he put up 18 in that third quarter and basically took over the game and won.
Do you know what was very reminiscent of, Mike?
Who's that?
2007, LeBron against Detroit.
Not quite to that same level, but a similar theory.
I'm just saying, that game still probably, in my opinion, is maybe LeBron's best feat. One of his best feats, right? Like when I think of memorable games of LeBron's first stint with the Cavs, that's the game that sticks out in my head, right?
For like, sure. Yeah, for sure.
Like, I don't know. I don't know if there's another one that maybe the buzzer beater, half court buzzer beater against the Magic in 09, like maybe. But I think that one's the one that was the one that makes me. That kind of reminded me that third quarter, the way he just kind of just said every time he took came the ball up the brought the ball to the floor, and he was gonna do something with it. And you know, once again, I want to be clear, it's not this, it's kind of was reminiscent of that. It was not the exact same thing to me.
And yet, I'll say this, that one of the things that impressed me more than anything was the fact that even during that run and immediately following that run of a bunch of heat check deep three-pointers and getting to the rim, there was still times then when Phoenix moving forward in that fourth quarter where Phoenix ran two guys at him just to get the ball out of his hands. And a guy who is 22 years old, you could have excused him if he'd have taken some bad shots with two guys on him or just pulled up and stepped back and whatever. Yeah. And he made a lot of simple plays where he's bringing the ball up the floor, Phoenix sent a double team at him, and he just kicked it to the next guy. Now, we're not talking about LeBron-level playmaking at this point, but we are talking about a guy who in the past, and we forget that he's 22 years old and he's been in the league, what, I think this is his fourth year. He would have at age 19 or 20 probably taken some of those bad shots. And the fact that he's growing and willing to get off the ball and have it come back to him, that's something that if you talk about what the best players do, they understand that there's a time when you have to attack. There's a time when you have to move the ball. And to me, that just ability to see and recognize that, hey, this is what Phoenix is trying to do to me. And I've got to be able to figure out a way to involve my teammates, get off the ball, have it come back to me. And now maybe I have an opportunity to go back to work offensively one-on-one and utilize the tremendous skill level and talent that that guy has. So my two takeaways in this series, again, are the size of Minnesota defensively. They are just making it so difficult for Phoenix to do anything around the rim. It just seems like there are bodies everywhere whenever Phoenix tries to put the ball on the floor and go to the baskets. That's number one. And then I think number two is the maturation and just ascension of Anthony Edwards to the point where, look, we saw it over the summer, right, in the FIBA World Cup in the Philippines, that it was pretty much the consensus of anybody who was involved with that team that Anthony Edwards was the best guy on that team. And the fact that he's been selected to play in next summer's Paris Olympics at 22 years old tells you what his reputation is like within the league. And I know he didn't shoot the ball well and he only had 15 points tonight, but sometimes the mark of a star player is you can play less than your optimal game and you can still have a huge outsize impact. And watching that game tonight, even though Edwards didn't shoot the ball extremely well, I still felt from a defensive standpoint, from a playmaking standpoint, from the ball in his hands, making decision standpoint, I felt Anthony Edwards really put his stamp on that game. And to echo your point, I don't see how Phoenix wins this series. Now, clearly, Booker and Durant, as they did last year against Denver, they could go home and they could combine for 70 points and make it hard for Minnesota to sweep or win in five. But I just think Minnesota's defense, that's going to travel. And even though Minnesota is a relatively inexperienced team, the size and tenacity and just I don't even know what the right word is for it, but just what they bring to the table defensively makes me think that you're not going to get those performances from Booker and Durant that you got last year. And I think Minnesota, I think you're probably right. I think Phoenix maybe squeaks one out at home when those two guys shoot the ball really well, but I think they're going to have a heck of a time trying to get two games off of Minnesota. I think Minnesota wins this series and goes on in five.
Five, okay, we agree. Look at that. Okay,
I agree.
Let's move to the next series, Mike, that happened tonight. It broke the trend, Mike. We came on the podcast before we started recording. I said, Mike, the trend has been broken. The first away team won a game tonight, and that was the Pacers downing Milwaukee. And, you know, I know that the game was like the first game was – it looked over early, like, because Dame had, what, 35 in the first half in game one? But he didn't score in the second half. And the Pacers kept chipping and chipping away at that game. And I was just sitting here thinking, you know, I think Indiana's going to make this a series. Like, I think they're you know, especially with Giannis's injury in question. And Mike, I tweeted this on the morning of the first game. I said the Pacers are going to win it in seven, Mike. I just felt like even if Giannis comes back, he's not going to be 100%. They're going to run up and down. The Pacers just the pace of play that they play and the lack of any defense that the rest of the roster has. I mean, the few highlights I saw, because it was on NBA TV and I don't have NBA TV. The few highlights that I saw, Chris Middleton looks like a really, really old man on defense. He's not himself, okay?
He doesn't move the way he did the year they won the title.
Dame never has really been a defensive player, okay? He's never been a defensive player. I just, like, you're relying on Naz Reid and – or not Naz Reid. You're relying on Bobby Portis and who else? Brooke Lopez.
Patrick Beverley played 34 minutes for the Bucks tonight.
Come on. Patrick Beverley was on – this is his 13 this year, isn't it? Patrick Beverley's 13 this year? Like, come on, man. Like, it's not happening. And Doc Rivers, by the way, is the coach. Let's not forget that fun fact. Let's not forget – that tweet, okay. I sent you was pretty good, wasn't it? I sent you was pretty good.
Let me ask you this question before you continue. I don't want to interrupt your thoughts on this series, is Doc – if they lose in the first round, is Doc back? Does he come back?
Well, he's got a. I mean, they're already paying two. They can't pay another coach, can they? I mean,
but did they sign him for the rest of the year, or did they sign him for a multi-year contract?
I thought it was a multi-year contract. I'll fact check that while you share your thoughts, and I'll get it to you.
I just don't know if you're Milwaukee and he loses this series in the first round.
4 year,
I guess. There's
4 year deal, oh my Mike. God.
Okay.
40 right. billion. Well, I guess he's 4 years, so 40 billion through 26, 27. He's back.
Okay. Okay. So he's going to be back. But if I'm a Bucks fan, I'm not sure how excited I am about that, because I'm not sure that there was a huge gain in success. Now, they did improve a little bit on the defensive end of the floor, but theoretically, this team, other than Damian Lillard, has been the number one defense for like 4 or 5 years, where they've been in the top five defensively in the league. So clearly there was a baseline here of defensive players and scheme and whatever.
Mike, it all started. This is a different team. Okay, Mike, this is a different team than it was last year. And I don't care who the coach is. Now you can argue and you can just look at the results in Boston that Drew Holiday was the defensive anchor of that team. He was the anchor. You know, was he the best player on offense? Was he the best? No, but he was the anchor. He was the pivot point. They trade him away because they want Dame Lillard. They get rid of him. Okay. They bring in Dame Lillard because of offense, but now the team can't even play defense. I don't know. And once again, we go back to last year, Giannis hurt in the first round. Giannis hurt again when it matters most. You know, it's not like, and he's not even a guy who's really a load management guy. He plays a lot in the regular season. I don't know what his final game total was, but it was definitely enough. Like, now he's hurt again at the end of the season. Like, come on, man. Like, and listen, I know there's nothing you can do to prevent an injury, but I think the injury is worse than they've let on. I've heard things on podcasts that if he's back for game six and game seven, the Bucks will be happy, is what I've heard. I don't know if you've seen anything different than that, but like, it would be stupid to rush him back. I mean, they rush him back, you have a Klay Thompson situation. I know that happened in practice, but Klay's working out and he does the other one, like, or he did, or something worse. Like, I don't know what I do if I'm a Milwaukee ownership. I don't know. Obviously, you're stuck with Doc Rivers and you're not going to pay. You've got him on the cards for 3 more years for $40 million overall, and then you're still paying. I don't even remember what the other guy's name. Who was the coach before that?
Jane Griffin.
Oh yeah, you're probably paying him. I don't know what they're paying him, but I don't know. I don't think they can do anything. And I know we've spent a lot of times about the deficits of Milwaukee, but I just look at, you know, Indiana of, you know, making the trade for Siakam. And we didn't think that was that big of a trade, right, Mike? When we talked about it, we thought, yeah, I mean, does it make them better? Maybe a little bit, but not, but you know, he's been huge. He was huge tonight.
At 37, 11 and 6 tonight.
I mean, those are pretty good stats in the playoffs, Mike. Those are pretty good
stats.
How was Halliburton's stats tonight, Mike? How was Halliburton's stats tonight? Is he still not good?
4 of 10 from the field, 3 of 7 from 3, 4 rebounds, 12 assists, 12 points.
Okay, so here's a question. I've been thinking about this, Mike.
Okay.
Halliburton or Darius Garland?
Well, so let's go. You got to take that debate back 2 years, right? I think you got to take that debate back 2 years where I think initially, right, Garland, most people would have said Garland 2 years ago. I think the vast majority of people would have taken Darius Garland based on his ability to shoot the ball better than Halliburton and based on his just overall play at that point. And then clearly at the beginning of this year and towards the end of last year and the fact that Halliburton played on the FIBA World Cup team and was one of the better guys there, I think people for sure would have said Halliburton at the beginning of the season. And now I think going forward, you have to look at it and say, I don't know the answer to the question. Now, again, Halliburton, there's all types of rumors. It's never been officially talked about by Tyrese Halliburton, but that after he got hurt, that he wanted to come back to make the 65 game limit. So maybe he came back early from his injury. And as a result of that, maybe he's been compromised and not been able to play from a physical standpoint at the same level that he was at the beginning of the season when he looked like he was a clear first or second team All-NBA guy for the first 35 games of the season. And clearly that production has dropped off. It hasn't resurfaced here in the playoffs. He's been similar to the player that he was for the last 30 games of the regular season where he was a good player, but certainly not the type of player that we saw during the in-season tournament through those first 30 or 35 games. So
yeah,
I don't know what direction people would go between Halliburton and Garland. I think the best version of both of those players that we saw, I think Halliburton probably had a better high than Garland's best, but I'm not sure which one I would want moving forward. Garland hasn't been great this entire year, as anybody who's listened to us talk has kind of heard the disappointment that we've had in Darius Garland this year in terms of his ability to protect the ball and make good decisions in clutch time. He hasn't been up to the same standard that he had been the previous two seasons. So I don't really know where to go with that question. I do know that neither guy this season has played to the best of what their capability has been or of what they've shown in past seasons or in Halliburton's case in the past half a season before that injury. So I don't know what to make of it. What's interesting is that Indiana was able to split here with Halliburton playing very, very average. And I think most people would have thought that you'd have had to have Halliburton much closer to the level of being that All-NBA guy we saw for the first half of the season as opposed to what we've seen in the second half. And he's clearly been closer to that second half guy in these two games. Siakam, on the other hand, has been tremendous.
Well, I got a fun stat about Siakam. Here you go, Mike.
All right,
Pascal Siakam is the first player since the merger with 35-plus points, 10-plus rebounds, 5-plus assists, 65% field goals percentage, and zero turnovers in a playoff game. That's a pretty good stat, Mike.
That's a pretty good stat. 16 of 23 from the field tonight. So, yeah, Siakam's been great. And I think when I look at Indiana and you think about their season in its entirety, right? It's about what they've done offensively. And then in the last half of the season, they picked it up a notch on defense, where not that they were a number one defense, but they were creeping towards an average defense. And if you have the number one or two offense and you have a middling defense, that's a formula for winning a lot of games. Yeah. And it seems like that's kind of where the Pacers have landed at what they've stumbled on. Now, I think also we saw Indiana go 4-1 against the Bucks in the regular season. That was almost entirely during the tenure of Adrian Griffin. I think every one of those games was played before Doc came on board. It also, I think all those games were played before the Halliburton injury. So it's hard to compare. It's not necessarily apples to apples, but certainly there's some matchup issues here when you think about the speed and youth of the Pacers, and then you think about the way and the pace that the Bucks prefer to play at when you have Middleton and Lopez, and obviously Dame offensively might like to play at a fast pace, but defensively he's going to be a liability trying to play it at that style that Indiana likes to go up and down. And so I just think when I look at Milwaukee without Giannis, I just don't know where does the scoring, where does the playmaking come from? And I know Middleton's been a good secondary playmaker, and the year they won the title, he was outstanding coming off and working screen and roll with Giannis and just being that secondary guy when they had to go to. And as you said, I don't think he doesn't look the same. And even though he had a decent game tonight and scored 15, I just don't know that he's the same player after all these injuries he's had over the last couple of years. He just doesn't feel as mobile offensively or defensively. And then Lopez is another year older, although he put up 22 tonight. Lillard, can't complain about his offensive production in these two games, 35 the first game, 34 in this game. I just don't think Milwaukee has enough. Their bench is weakened, obviously, when you have Giannis out, then Bobby Portis has to start, so he's no longer your spark plug coming in off the bench. Milwaukee's a hard team to figure out. I do think that if Giannis can get back, and I don't know, maybe he doesn't come back at all in this series, maybe he comes back. If he comes back by game 6 or 7, maybe it's too late. Maybe you don't even get there. I think this is probably a 7-game series, in all honesty, because I don't think that Indiana is going to run away and all of a sudden they got this game and they figured something out and they're going to run the table. I would expect Milwaukee to get a game in Indiana. And I just have a hard time envisioning Indiana, unless Halliburton can get back to form, which it doesn't appear that that is going to happen. I think the Bucks' championship experience and just what they've accomplished as a team is going to allow them to hold the fort and pull through. And even if Giannis doesn't play, I think it's a 7-game series. I would probably still pick Milwaukee. I wouldn't feel great about it, but I'm going to say Milwaukee in 7 in this series.
All right. Well, I'm staying with Indiana in 7, Mike. That's what I'm staying with. I'm going to go with it. I'm going to trust my gut. It's only led me astray a few times, like Lakers winning the championship a few years ago. So we're gonna go with that.
Hey, coaches. Today, let's talk about Integrity Insight, a mini course crafted for coaches focused on team conduct and values from our friends at Teams of Men. Why Integrity Insight? This course is a journey into your team's climate and culture. You'll reflect on past incidents, assess your team's communication, and plan for a future where integrity is at the core of decision-making, on and off the court. Integrity Insight comes with practical guides and digital tools for effective planning and collaboration. The goal? To empower you to lead a team where ethical conduct and character growth are paramount. This course is about transforming your team culture, embedding values and ethics in every aspect. Ready to dive deeper into team integrity? Email us at teamsofmen@gmail.com with the subject Integrity Deep Dive to get started. All right, coaches, listen up. It's time to kick this season up a notch and give your team the competitive edge they deserve with Game Changer. Game Changer is the ultimate tool for coaches with features designed to help take your team to the next level. It's time to take this season to new heights. Download Game Changer for free on iOS or Android to start getting valuable stats and video your team can build on. Get the ultimate coach's tool today by downloading Game Changer. Game Changer. Stream. Score. Connect. Learn more at gc.com/hoopheads. That's gc.com/hoopheads.
All right, so then travel back in time, and we're going to talk about the games yesterday. We're going to start with your and mine, Cleveland Cavaliers. Listen, the game ended up being closer than it should have been. And you tell me if this is off base, Mike. I feel like the Cavs are the Knicks from last year, and Orlando are the Cavs. No experience. They just don't know how to handle it. They can't shoot the basketball. They're like the first game specifically, they just got their butts destroyed in like just not as aggressive as they needed to be. Very passive, just shooting terrible shots, not doing a good job. And I think they were better yesterday for sure. Now, obviously, the score ended up closer than it should have been. But Wagner got hot in the third, end of the third, beginning of the fourth quarter, cut the lead. And then obviously, you know, I know you and I were texting, and I think at one point they cut it to 8. And I'm like, what the heck is this nonsense? And you just said this team with a smiling glasses emoji guy. But they ended up pulling it out. And listen, mission accomplished. They're 2-0. I think they win in five. I think they're going to end up splitting in Orlando and finishing it off in game five. I would love it if they would just end it in four, because I don't think there's any way we'll talk about the other series. I don't think there's any way that Boston doesn't go four, because I think Miami's terrible. So I want the Cavs to go four too, so that Boston doesn't get extra rest. You know, because they won't delay the start of the second round game for the end of the first round games. It's at least been shown in the past that they'll play those second round games sometimes because they're trying to keep a cadence a little bit. But I don't want Boston to get any more rest than we're going to get. So I would love it if they would finish it in four. I think they're going to finish it in five. I saw some interesting things. You know, Jared Allen has more rebounds in the first two games than he did all of last year against the Knicks. Did you know that, Mike?
I didn't know that, but it doesn't surprise me at all.
39 rebounds versus 37. Okay. Then the stat that they showed, I don't know if you were watching Bally or if you were watching, you had to be watching Bally because you couldn't watch it on NBA TV. But on Bally,
blacked
they
out, baby.
Blacked out. Oh my God. That was a rage. That was a rage of, I don't know if you saw that on social, I don't know how much of it you saw on social media, but I follow more people local than you do. But yeah, people were none too pleased about that. The stats that, you know, Jared Allen, 20 points, 20 rebounds. That was like the most rebounds, other than Kevin Love. And then when I saw that Brad Doherty was tied with him, I was amazed by that. Like 1993, Brad Doherty hit 20 rebounds. I really like that they have him on the broadcasts. Nothing against Austin Carr, but it's time, buddy. It's time. It's time for you to hang him up. Brad Doherty. I like that though they keep him on the pregame. I like that he's on the pregame and halftime show, but I his ramblings, I can't deal. The other thing, hey Cavs, get rid of Jim Jones on the, he was out for like a month or two on the radio broadcast, and it was just the guy doing it, and it was so much better. And now that Jim Jones is like, yeah, I told you they were going to do that. I told you this. I'm like, get out of here. And then all of you people that are listening to this podcast are like, who the heck is Jim Jones? And who, like, maybe you know Austin Carr, but Jim Jones, listen, he was a great Cavs player back in like the 60s, maybe 70s.
Jim Jones does not head too many times.
He does not add
anything to the radio broadcast. Whenever I listen to Jim Jones, I always just think he'll say things like, "Well, you got to come out and be more aggressive," or "Hey, they did this," and that's how we show him. He said yesterday. Here's a good one. This is what he said yesterday, because I was coming back from with Madeline from shooting, and we were listening to the beginning of the game, and the score was 9-6. And I think, didn't Mitchell have like maybe six of the
seven,
first nine?
He had seven
or
of the nine. He had seven of the first seven, nine. He had a three, two free throws and a shot. Yeah.
And Jim Jones said, "Well, you know what we got to know here." And I think that they had, and it was 9-6 or whatever, but the Cavs probably had shot like 3-12 or something at that point. Like there were 6 minutes in the game. The Cavs had 9 points. And he said, "Well, you know, Donovan Mitchell, this is the experience that he has, and That's what got the Cavs off to a great start, is his playoff experience. That's what he knows how to set the tone for this team. I'm like, Jim, they're up 9-7. It's not like they got off to a 20-2 run because Mitchell's doing whatever. So anyway, I agree with you there. And I think your analogy of comparing this series between the Cavs and Orlando to last season series between the Knicks and the Cavs, it does feel very, very similar in that Orlando can't shoot the ball. And the Cavs are making it very difficult for them to really do much of anything.
Evan Mobley, Mike. Evan Mobley is doing a great job on Banchero. Like,
he is. He's making him work for sure.
His on-ball stats against Banchero are fantastic. Just great. So it's good to see that, right? It's good to see that. I know it's a small sample size. It's two games. But it's just good to see that we're matching up well. And, you know, Mitchell's been great. Mitchell's been awesome. Right.
That's the difference. Last year against the Knicks, he was terrible. I don't think he had one good game in that series last year versus he's had two good games.
Well, and Jared Allen has been great too, Mike. Jared Allen has been great.
Correct.
In the first two games. So.
But the fact of the matter remains is Jared Allen can have his 20 rebounds. You need somebody in the playoffs like Donovan Mitchell that can get you a basket, that can do the things that he's capable of doing. There's nobody else on this team that's capable of doing the things from a scoring standpoint and getting his own offense. There just isn't anybody else on the team that's capable of doing that. And so you need him to be at his very best if this team is going to be able to do anything beyond what they've already done to this point in the series and moving on, thinking about Boston. So to me, I think you're right that what's been the difference is A, the Cavs defense has, and maybe you credit JB Bickerstaff to some degree with making sure that defensively the Cavs are
Hold on. I gotta refute you here. I don't know if did you hear his press conference yesterday before the game?
No.
A reporter asked JB Bickerstaff, how do you make adjustments? And you and I have been on board with this, that he doesn't make adjustments. He goes, well, I'm not really big on adjustments because you just kind of play with the flow of the game and you either win or you lose. You don't need to making adjustments and tinkering with things. He said something along those lines and everything made sense, Mike. I'm like, this guy's an idiot.
Okay. Well, hey, at least he's honest. At least he's honest. Like,
anyway, I couldn't believe that he admitted that he does not.
He I was going to give him a little credit for
just
at least
playing in the flow of the game. I'm going to see if I can find that quote, Mike. I'm going to find it.
For at least designing the Cavaliers defense to funnel shots to the three-point line and make sure that they're kind of walling off the paint against Banchero. And I think your point about Evan Mobley has been well taken, that he's done a really good job from an individual standpoint. But I think the Cavs collectively as a team have done a good job of forcing him to give up the ball. And I know in the first game he had 9 turnovers, and I know he had another bushel full of them in the game yesterday. So the Cavs, if you look at the way that this series is playing out, I don't know that it's super surprising. I definitely would have picked the Cavs had I made a prediction or we had done a playoff preview. I probably would have said the Cavs in 5 or 6, and I think that's probably the direction that it's going to go. It still doesn't excuse the fact that if you look at the other side of the bracket and you look at what those other teams are and you think about Indiana, you think about the Knicks, you think about the Sixers, the fact that you could have been facing one of those teams in the conference semifinals with an opportunity to go to the Eastern Conference Finals comparatively to the Boston Celtics, I just think that it still is inexcusable that they tanked their way into Orlando. Now, were they maybe more likely to lose a first-round series? Probably. But the odds of them winning a second-round series have dropped dramatically by being in the 4 seed instead of being in the 2
Mike,
or the 3.
Okay, here you go. And not only do I have the quote, I have audio. Here you go.
Okay, let me hear it.
Perfect, right? So I think you go back and watch the film and, you know, again, see where they had success and figure out, you know, what are you going to do in the areas that they had success.
Well, that sounds like Charlie Brown's teacher. So areas that you might as well just hold that off.
I got nothing on that one. Okay. Well, I apologize. I was hoping that it was going to come clear, but it wasn't. Anyways, so it's just him talking about how it's not really no making adjustments. It's just looking at what they did well and trying to limit it. I'm like,
all right, well, that's theoretically an adjustment. Look, we've long chronicled our distaste for JB Bickerstaff's coaching style. And like I said, my biggest thing with him is I feel like he spends so much time just complaining about calls and officiating instead of coaching his team.
On coaching styles, have you noticed that the first two games that every single time you're watching the game, all you do is you hear Jamal Mosley yelling? Did you notice that?
There was a lot of Jamal Mosley audio in the background,
just
for sure.
Just him yelling defensive sets or yelling like down, like just make sure you listen to it on the Thursday night. If you haven't paid, you're not going to unhear it now. I'm sorry that I've done that to you, Mike, because you're not going to unhear him shouting at the whole time. So anything else on this, Mike?
No, I think the only thing, that really, look, the Cavs are in good position, right? 2-0. Yeah. I think you couldn't have asked for a better start. The thing that still is disappointing to me is the fact that it doesn't feel like a real playoff run, because I just don't know how they compete with Boston in the next round. And maybe they know something that we don't know about that matchup, but I still just can't accept the fact that they tanked out of the opportunity to be on the opposite side of the bracket. And I know we're going to talk about the Philly-New York series in a minute, and we already talked about Milwaukee-Indiana. There's not one of those four teams that I have to be honest that I would be – or the Cavs should have been scared about if they're playing well. And I don't understand the mindset of what they did. And it'll be interesting to hear what they say, regardless of what the results are in that next series against Boston, if they get there, which hopefully they will. But if they lose to Boston, it'll be interesting to hear what they have to say. And if for some miracle they were to beat the Celtics, it would be interesting to hear what they say, just because, again, I don't understand how you pass up the opportunity to get on the other side of the bracket of the Celtics and have an opportunity to play the Knicks, Philly, Indiana, Milwaukee, whatever combination of those teams, Miami, whatever combination of those teams you thought was going to be there. I just don't get it. But I'm glad they're up 2-0. They've taken care of business. They're playing well. And if that can continue, who knows? The ceiling on this team is probably higher than what we saw over the last 20 games of the season. And if Mitchell's healthy and playing well, then maybe there's a chance that they can at least try to make that series against Boston competitive. So let's move on to whatever series we're going to next.
We're going to go to the New York Philly. And let me just say this, Mike. The games have been fantastic. They've been great. I didn't think there was any way that Philly was going to lose that game last night. Up 5 with, 34 seconds left? Now, the Brunson 3, awesome. The steal, then the ensuing possession. I'm not going to sit here and you know, I don't know if you saw the last two-minute report that came out or anything regarding the last two-minute report, but the last two-minute report basically said that Philly was screwed. 7 infractions, Mike. 7 infractions against New York in the last 45 seconds. The OG Anunoby should have been called for 3 seconds. There should have been a foul on both OG and the other guy who pushed Maxey. So the 76ers should have been granted a timeout. Twice, and then I don't remember what the other two were. But listen, I don't want to sit and belabor that point. I want to belabor the fact that the Sixers were in complete control of that game, and they couldn't inbound the basketball. It looked like a fourth grade, third grade girls basketball game of a team that has never played basketball before. They couldn't get the ball in on a simple press. a press break. There's only one person to fall to that, and that's the coach. That he didn't have the wherewithal, Nick Nurse. And I've been a long-standing, I felt like Nick Nurse is a really good coach. He should have called a timeout before that ball even left the guy's hands. There's no business. I know they were down to their last timeout. There's no business letting it get to that point. And all that being said, Joel Embiid had a great look to tie the game at the end of the regulation. It was very close. It was just a little short. Embiid's clearly compromised. I definitely agree with you. I would not be afraid of them in the next round of the playoffs.
They're a two man team at this point.
And Embiid's not even really a full person.
Correct.
The fact that he's playing with whatever he's got going on and he's playing as efficiently and as well as he is, considering that fact, is impressive. We give him a lot of grief for his issues, okay? But we got to give him credit where credit's due. He's toughing it out and he's trying to play out there. The Knicks, Brunson's been pitiful. He's been terrible. Josh Hart had a great first game. He had a good game yesterday too. The Knicks are doing what they did to us last year a little bit. They're not as good. I mean, they're missing Randall for sure. But they're getting the job done, Mike. And ultimately, once again, the playoffs, that's what you want to have happen. And, I think, I said the Sixers in six when this series started, Mike. That's going to need a lot of help for that to happen. They're going to have to win the next four games. I think the Sixers are going to win this first one in Philly. I think they're going to win this one. I think the old NBA is going to – there's going to be some course correction in this game based on what the last two-minute report. And the Sixers are going to get every call known to man in the next game. I just have a feeling. I think the Sixers are going to, I think it's going to be a five game series. The Knicks are going to win in five.
My biggest takeaway from that game last night,
I just can't get behind Embiid being healthy enough to carry the team. That's really what it is.
My biggest takeaway from the game last night was when that shot from Embiid didn't go in and they took a close up camera shot of Embiid's face. And he just looked like a dude who was completely, like his soul had left his body. I mean, he
LeBron
looked
2018 finals, Mike.
He just looked completely empty, crushed, looking at it going, I just gutted out this game on whatever's left of my knee. I put up 34 and 10, and we still lost. And I don't know if that's something that you can come back from. Philly at this point is honestly like a two-man team. I mean, once you get beyond Maxey and Embiid, I just don't know who's going to produce anything meaningful that is going to help you to win games. Buddy Hield, completely a non-factor. Now, look, Buddy has his limitations, but you would think that surrounding Embiid, that there'd be a place for him to be able to get some shots off and get some threes up in the air, and he's been able to do nothing. Tobias Harris is his typical kind of, at best he's blah, at worst he's completely disappeared and you have no idea where he is on the floor. So you mentioned about giving Embiid credit for gutting it out, and I think we have to, right? I think you have to give him credit for what he's done. When he fell in game one after doing the Tracy McGrady dunk off the backboard and then falls on the ground and his eyes are rolling back in his head, I think that the fact that he's come back and played is nothing short of miraculous. Yeah. And yet at the same time, this whole thing speaks to the Joel Embiid experience, which is he's a great player. He's a tremendous talent, but he's a tremendous talent who hasn't been able to be at his best in the playoffs for whatever reason, whether that's a specific injury, whether that's generally speaking his conditioning, whether it's some other illness that comes up at the wrong time. It just feels like this guy, to some degree, is snake bit, both sort of circumstances outside of his control. And I still feel like he's just not in the kind of condition that he's got to be in to the point where he can be a guy that you can give the ball to in the last 2 minutes after he's played 46 minutes and feel like he's going to come through and do what needs to be done. I just don't feel that way. And then I know we're going to get to the Denver series here in just a second, but Jokic, I still think back to the game for me that stands out about Nikola Jokic, maybe more than any game that he's played in the last 5 years, is the double overtime game against Portland, which is probably now 3 years ago, where he played like 60 minutes of that game or 62 minutes and was equally as effective at the end of that game as he was at the beginning. And Jokic doesn't look like a guy when you think about, hey, who are some of the fittest players in the NBA? Nikola Jokic's name or his body would not surface in that discussion. But that dude, at his size, he's the same guy in the fourth quarter that he is in the first quarter. And like it or not, you just can't say that about Joel Embiid. I think the Knicks are going to finish this series off. I could see it being a sweep, in all honesty, because I just think when I looked at Embiid's face, I saw a dude who was done mentally and physically. He just looked like, I don't know if I can go back out there and do this again. And if he can't do what he's done the last two games, which he's been great, but not good enough when they've needed him the most. And I think the Knicks, I don't know. Everybody's saying it's going to be a long series. I think it's the Knicks in four or five at the most, because I just think Philly's done.
Yep. All right. So you foreshadowed a little bit here, Mike. Hope, before we move on, Mike, I texted you. We're four series in. We're already at 54 minutes.
All right,
so we're gonna speed it up.
We're at 53 minutes. We're gonna try to be done by an hour and 10. So that gives us like 17 minutes to buzz through these last four series.
Hopefully the Lakers series. Listen, here's what I want to say about the Lakers game last night. Probably just the overall, especially the fourth quarter, which I know you got a lot of watch out of that fourth quarter, Mike. That fourth quarter might go down as one of my favorite fourth quarters in NBA, just especially the last 3 minutes, just the franticness of it. You know, LeBron steal dunk, and then right down the floor, Michael Porter Jr. hits a three. And then the next possession, LeBron goes to the basket, clearly fouled, not called. Just back and forth, trading blows. Then the Lakers get the lead. Then it's tied. And then the Lakers go down the floor. And somehow LeBron has a wide open three, which, by the way, I understand. You people are mad, well, you know. He missed a shot. He also made, like, I think he had 14 or 16 points in the fourth quarter. No one else on his team was doing anything. And we got to say this, like, he's 39. I want to admit something too, Mike. I was watching him in the first half go to the basket. And I was like, he's coming. Father Time is coming, because he did not look as like he wasn't finishing at the basket.
He's nowhere near from an athletic standpoint. He's nowhere near. He's getting by.
But last night was the first time I've sat and like watched him play, and I've been like, it's noticeable. He's getting to the basket, but he's not finishing at the basket. He's getting to the basket where, and we took for granted, like, he's got three guys guarding him at the basket, and he was finishing those layups. Now, that one he finished in transition, where he basically was tackled and he got it in, like, that was amazing. Like, that was great. But the bottom line is this. The Lakers had to win that game to have a shot. There is zero chance that they win four out of five games against this Nuggets team. I know you were probably saying there's zero chance they're winning this series before then, But if they steal that game last night, which they should have, I think it's a much more likely that it's going six games. I think it's going six games. I still think the Nuggets win. It's going six games. I had the Nuggets before the series started. I had the Nuggets in seven, Mike. I don't think it's going seven. I think it's going five. I think the Lakers are going to win one at home. I think they're going to win one home. They're not going to get swept again. But I think the Nuggets win in five.
I think it's a sweep.
By the way, Jamal Murray was terrible the whole first three quarters, and in the fourth quarter, it's like someone injected him with some kind of steroids, and he just decided to play basketball again. So
it's like him in the regular season versus him in the playoffs, sort of the way it was. The first three quarters of the game were kind of like regular season Jamal Murray, and then boom, he turned it on in the fourth quarter and obviously hits that huge shot. I just think Denver, Jokic is just he's an offense unto himself. That he can get whatever shot that he wants, either for himself or for his teammates. And even when things aren't going the way that the Nuggets want them to go, when they're down 20 in the third quarter, it just feels like he keeps coming. And he's just so steady. And I think that's the difference, like I said, between a guy like him and a guy like Embiid. Like Jokic, you give him the ball in the post with a minute and a half to go in the game, and he is fresh as a daisy, and he's going to still do the same things that he could have done in that first quarter. So I expect Denver to continue to march on towards repeating as NBA champions, and I think they take care of business and beat the Lakers two more times. I think, look, you're not going to get a much better performance. I know AD didn't do much in the fourth quarter, but you're not going to get a much better performance than you got out of LeBron and AD than you did in this game. And the fact that you couldn't win it with those two guys playing that well and a 20-point lead doesn't bode well for them even sneaking out one game. So I'm going to say Denver in four, and let's move on to the next series.
All right. So we're gonna turn our attention to the two games tomorrow night that are only playing one game. And we'll start with the one that I think is a sweep, and I've already mentioned it. Celtics Heat. I mean, the Heat are compromised. No Jimmy Butler. They're just not good now. I mean, I know they won the play-in game, but I just don't. They can't beat the Celtics. There's no way. I don't think they can win a game. I just can't. This is a sweep. I have nothing else to say. It's a sweep. The Celtics are good. The end.
Yeah, this series is over. There's no way that Miami. They're clearly not going to win the series. I don't think they get a game either. I think it's a Boston sweep, barring Boston completely falling asleep in a game, which they're wont to do every once in a while, but I don't see it happening in this series. I think Boston takes care of business. The Heat just doesn't have enough firepower as they're currently constituted. And without Jimmy Butler, kind of the heart and soul, last year you think about, they have Butler, you have Kyle Lowry, despite what you think about Kyle Lowry as a player, he was a
we
guy.
We didn't talk
that,
about him getting shoved to the side. That was pretty good. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that was good too. Nah, Miami just doesn't have enough. They don't have enough on both ends of the floor to compete with Boston. And so I think Boston sweeps Miami and moves into the second round, and hopefully we'll be awaiting the Cavs' arrival in the second round as well.
Yeah. All right. The other game tomorrow night, arguably the best game won, right? It has to be the best game won. OKC, yes. New Orleans. Listen, they're good. Both teams. If only there was this guy named Zion Williamson playing. Woo, baby. Would this be... If Zion was playing, New Orleans would win this series, hands down.
I agree 100%.
And
there's
and
no way the Thunder have nobody that could deal with Zion. Nobody.
By the way, I read somewhere that if they get to game six, Zion might be available.
I've heard that.
And if they're teasing it out there, then they must be pretty optimistic, because they've always been pretty murky on his timeline. If they get to game six and he's like, here's my thinking. If they get to game six and they have a chance to win the series,
Well, if they're in game six, they're going to have a chance to win the series.
Well, no, no, but I'm saying
if you get to game six,
if they get to game six, I don't even know. I wonder if I hold them until I get to game seven. I would just, if they get to game seven and he's like maybe available, I would play him. But I wouldn't play him before a game seven. I don't think. I think I would hold him because I don't know.
Look, we don't know where he is. We don't know where he is physically, right? I mean, clearly, from a hamstring standpoint, the hamstring could go at any time on Zion, and so I think you just base it on, is the guy healthy or is he not healthy? How does he feel? How does it compare to past instances of these hamstring injuries that he's dealt with? And if he's ready to go, you put him out there. And if he's not, then you don't. But if Zion's playing in this series, and let's put it this way, if he comes back for game six, and at worst case, obviously at that point, they'd be down 3-2. I still like their chances with Zion on the lineup. I think that he's obviously a nightmare matchup for anybody. But when you look at Oklahoma City and you look at the size that they have, or the lack of size, the lack of bulk that they have, this team's tailor-made for Zion to feast. And so if he comes back, I think you clearly have to pick the Pelicans. As the series is constituted right now, it's a pretty good matchup for Oklahoma City. I think when you look at it from their perspective, I think what you have to do is you just have to continue to use Shea to attack the Pelicans. And then I think you have to figure out a way to continue to get Shed involved. New Orleans obviously has Herb Jones on the perimeter as a defender. You've got Trey Murphy getting more minutes in the absence of Zion, which, as much as that can be a negative, obviously with no Zion, I think Trey Murphy getting more minutes, Willie Green's going to have to figure out how to get in more minutes anyway, whether that's this year or next season, depending on how things go. The Pelicans.
Oh, that just reminded me of something. Better. I just reminded me of something.
Go ahead.
Cavs, really quickly, go back to the Cavs. Game one, I'm listening to them talk in the second quarter, and they said, J.B. Bickerstaff says that he feels like he could use Sam Merrill as a weapon. Sam Merrill played 4 minutes in game one and then didn't play in game two.
He's a weapon, baby.
Sorry.
He's a weapon.
I know. But I don't know. Listen.
Ingram's got to play better. If New Orleans is going to win the series with or without Zion, Ingram's got to be better than he was the other night. And they need him to be the scorer that he's been at various times during his tenure in New Orleans. Unlike Anthony Edwards, who had a coming out party at the FIBA World Cup, Brandon Ingram had a kind of I'm leaving the building sort of moment there at the FIBA World Cup and was not good. And he's had a very up and down, injury plagued season with the Pelicans this year. Certainly not as good as maybe what he was hoping coming into the year. And I'm sure not as good as what New Orleans was hoping for.
Yeah.
So I think Oklahoma City is probably, if these two teams, the way they're constituted, Oklahoma City is probably the better team, but I don't know that they are that much better than New Orleans. I think this is a long series regardless. I think both teams can make life difficult defensively for the other team. Think about what Dort was doing to Brandon Ingram and making his life very, very difficult. And I think Herb Jones did the same against Shea. And now Shea still got 26 and still hit two really big shots in the last minute and a half of that game. But the fact of the matter is he had to work for everything that he got. And I think this series, I think that game one is going to be very indicative of the type of games that we're going to see throughout this series. I think they're going to be rather low scoring, maybe not necessarily all in the 90s, but I don't think you're going to see any 130 point games in this series. I think the games are all going to be played in the 90s and maybe up to 105 or so. I'd be surprised if you get much above that. And I think it's probably going to go seven. And I'll just have the caveat. I'll use the same one that you used. If Zion comes back at any point in this series, I think the Pelicans win it. If Zion is unavailable for the entirety of the series, I think Oklahoma City wins it. So I'm going to bet that Zion is not back. I'm going to say Oklahoma City in seven in this series.
Okay. All right. And then the last series we'll briefly touch on is the Clippers, Mavericks. The Mavericks decided that they needed to wait until the second half to show up in game one. Tonight, it's a 1-point game going into the fourth quarter. The Clippers are winning 66-65, a defensive struggle, Mike. Defensive struggle for sure. But I don't know. My main thought is I don't trust either of these teams. I really wanted to trust the Mavericks, but I just don't. And here's the problem. Like, I thought in game one, obviously Kyrie had a good game, and Kyrie played well. Doncic played well, but everyone else, I mean, not good, Mike. Not good at all.
They need a little production out of somebody else. They need to get somebody else going. Like, Gafford started this game and played 9 minutes so far. He hasn't scored.
His back. He's done. He's not playing anymore. He's done. His back.
I know. I'm just saying. Like, you just need more. You need more production out of somebody else beyond your two main guys if you're going to win. Now, that being said, I'm not so sure that. I don't believe in this Clippers team in any way, shape, or form. I know Harden had a good game in his first game, and tonight he's been to the line 9 times, and he's got 19 points through three quarters. So he hasn't been the worst version of playoff James Harden. But I still think that a team that is as reliant on James Harden as the Clippers are, at some point, that's going to burn you. And I think Luka in this series somehow finds a way, despite the fact that Kawhi's back and he's been, I would say, from what the box score tells me and what I watched in the first 8 minutes of that game before the podcast started, Kawhi is not supernova Kawhi, at least not in this game. And the odds of him being that coming off the injury seem pretty low. And I guess I like betting on the best guy in the series. So I think this is a long series, but I think when push comes to shove and it's game seven, I would put my faith in Luka over James Harden game seven. So give me the Mavericks in six in this series. It's basically a bet on Luka being the best player in the series. I think that's where I end up.
I think that's a fair assessment. You know, I hope that's what happens because I can't stand the Clippers. We've come a long way from Lob City Clippers to where we are now. I used to kind of like the Clippers. Now I don't. So James Harden, it's all your fault.
Ruined whatever
joy
slight
we have.
Fandom. Yeah. Whatever slight fandom there was for the Clippers.
Yeah.
As soon as James Harden joined your team, that fandom quickly evaporated. So I'm with you on that one. I'm not in any way, shape, or form.
My thought is, Mike, the next week or whenever we do our next NBA, if we do something, you know, we're not going to promise anything, but if we do it on, you know, at some other point, you know, maybe Saturday night after the Cavs clinch the sweep, you know, or whenever we focus a little more on those other games and not spend as much time. Obviously, it'll depend on what happens, right? But we'll spend a little bit more time on the other series should they warrant it.
Sounds like a plan to me. All right. We're going to watch the end of this Clippers Mavericks game. See what happens. We appreciate you checking out tonight's episode. Obviously by the time you hear this, you will more than likely know the result of Clippers Mavs. So we'll see where that lies with our prediction. Will the Clippers be up 2-0, which will make our Mavs and well, at least my Mavs in seven prediction a little bit tougher to get to.
Well, you said Mavs in six, but you said Mavs in six, so it'll be really tough if the Mavs lose this game. But
no, I said seven, didn't I? Did I say six?
You said six, but
I did. When tonight?
Yeah,
I'm gonna fact check that. I don't think I said that.
You said that like 3 minutes ago.
All right, well, I'm gonna go back and listen. I must be falling asleep. Anyway, all right, it is time to go. Thanks for checking out this NBA first round playoff edition of the Hoopheads Pod. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job.
A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.